Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly. It is 13th of July, and I only have four days until my family vacation. I'm so dead. Sorry.
Exactly.
For something, and I don't know. Anyway, so welcome to this BNP Weekly. These are super scripted, super organized.
We practiced this joke for like 10 times.
Yes, indeed.
It
indeed.
Shows, right?
That's why Darko doesn't laugh so anymore. It's an old joke. But in the BNP Weekly, we talk about what's happening in the Microsoft 365 world within the past week. So we cover some articles. We typically have a visitor. And again, we have an MVP as a visitor this week. But before we go there, my name is Vesa Ivonen, and I'm a program manager in the OneDrive SharePoint platform team. And with me as the co-host is Waldek. So let's do the
intro. Hi, everybody. First. My name is Aldo Masegas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest from the US, Darcy Hess. Welcome, DRC.
Hi, everyone.
So, Darcy, can you do a quick intro? Who are you? What do you do? What's your background?
Sure. So, my name is DRC. I've been in the SharePoint space a little over a decade now, somehow still not an alcoholic. My world kind of crosses boundaries these days. I went from like just loving SharePoint to now having to know Teams and EMS and just everything else. And it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. It's hard to keep up with Microsoft, all the great new innovation out there. It's like I wake up and have to learn 12 new things that day. So it's pretty amazing. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. You've been an MVP for quite a few years as well and all of
Four
that
years,
stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time flies. Huh? Exactly.
Sometimes too fast.
just to share for the listeners or watchers. So what's been your kind of a focus area on the SharePoint and what do you do in the projects in the day-to-day work?
So for the last several years, I started off in branding and creating the old public-facing websites on SharePoint. I know, hiss. Go cry. It's okay. Hopefully none of them still exist. And I've kind of moved still in the design of new SharePoint framework and new intranets, but I also kind of moved a little bit more into the information architecture stage and business analyst a little bit. And I'm starting to move towards the dev realm a little bit as we move on. So at the end of the day, I'm hoping to kind of just become my own little like one-stop shop of, fun stuff.
Whatever is needed. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Makes sense.
At least not how to do it the bad way.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And it's actually good to have at least knowledge, because obviously if you have multiple people in a project, you can then request other people to do this. And it's better to know what they can do rather than just tell them that do something like this. I don't know what it is, right? Make it square, yes. But you can't. No, make it square. No. Because that's kind of the typical challenge for sure in the projects where people, if the salespeople are not quite up to date on what's possible, then they sell stuff which is...
Salespeople are never up to date regarding what's possible. What do you mean?
I got mock-ups this morning from a client where like comms made the mock-ups and I'm like, yeah, let's start from scratch. Like the answer is no. And let's have a
computer
talk.
Should know. But that is actually an interesting thing, right? Because like if you think about the past when we used to build internet sites on SharePoint, it was the very first thing you want to do. Make it not look like SharePoint. It has to be ours, right? Nowadays, we're on the very, very extreme other side where we say, the way it looks is perfectly fine. Let's just add these few things that we miss, and then we take it from there. So how do you experience that journey going from you're basically dictating how things will look like and behave to now you're kind of adapting yourself and requirements to how things work out of the box just to make more use of the things, the basically, as you say, every single thing that Microsoft adds every week to it?
It's a really fine line, right? Like companies that are paying for a very high-priced intranet don't like to hear no or don't like to hear that's not recommended. But you go, okay, well, here's your other option. If we do X, Y, and Z, then it could potentially break every single week. And do you have developers on staff that could fix it? And, oh yeah, those developers that you would need cost X amount of money per hour. They all of a sudden start to go, okay, so what can we do?
There and, you go.
You know, it's about putting a little bit of reality back into it of like, it's great that you've chosen this platform, but regardless of platform, it's about getting information to your users and the way it's presented. And there's got to be some give and take there. And, you know, eventually you find common ground, but it can be a rough journey to get there.
Right. And the one thing I wonder though, right? Because like, it sounds very much to me like when I am a dev and I build an app, I live and breathe it. And it's just everything that I build in it makes for me perfect sense. I wonder to what degree it's the same case with comms, right? Who come up with a new design information flow and they get it. But employees have jobs to do. They don't spend their days on internet, right? So for them, it's very much, can I find the thing that I need to do my job? I find it, I use that in my work, and I'm gone. And I don't stay the whole day on internet, right? So to what extent do you see their difference between, I don't know, could you call it, not really ambition, but like different groups within companies strive or have their different goals and ideas about how internet is being used?
And you know what? It's interesting because I'm actually working with a client right now that is the opposite side of the spectrum. They're like, why can't it just be like Google? Give me one search box and someone should be able to find anything they want. And I'm like, but users don't know how to search and they don't know what they're looking for. And then you take away the discoverability piece. And I'm like, because it's not Google. Like I can't find what I'm looking for in Google anyway, half the time, like, unless you know exactly like how to weed through everything.
Words.
So it's like, it's trying to not only teach people about the technology, but trying to teach them about human behavior. Right. And that is a much harder conversation because people like hear things or they see something that works for them and they don't realize that in order to actually get content to people, you kind of have to give them like four different ways to get there. That could work for different kinds of people and what they're working in and their role and level of knowledge with technology. I'm like, there is no one easy answer, but you've got to take everybody into account. And it's an interesting conversation. And that's why people need us. It's to help guide them that way.
Consultants helping them on realizing that, okay, so the way I think is not necessarily how my core audience thinks, because I'm from communication organization and I know these things, but they don't necessarily know that.
And also there is this other side where you acknowledge, well, yeah, they think that way. But hey, there is this other way. If they would think that way, that might be easier for them to do their work. And then you need to convince them, basically, how about we change? And they're like, no.
Change is always hard. Change
exactly.
is hard. Exactly.
So. No. I mean, change isn't hard as long as it does not affect me, right?
Yeah, sure. But if you drive the change,
how often
for
does
example,
it affect you?
every day.
If you drive the change with a gradual transition by showing that the new way of doing stuff is better than the old way of doing stuff, but then at the same time you provide the both options, then people then gradually move over, and hopefully we'll get people to transition. But it is definitely a hard thing. Even if I think about the Microsoft way, somebody was commenting this actually earlier. I read some comments related on our last story and last BNB week where we talk about go to the modern. And then somebody was saying, yeah, but there's still areas where you're not modern and we cannot go there, which is absolutely fair. But that's one of the good examples, which we also as a Microsoft need to think through, is how do we get people to transition to the modern? Because we, when you think about it, it's business decisions and we want to at some point shut down the classic. It just makes sense. We're not going to keep both of them running.
For anything even like security risks later.
It's the level of there's the increased attack surface as an example. So
well, but it's all about it's the interesting thing that any kind of change, it's never about tech, right? Sure, like in this case, you want to go from classic to modern. So you would seem like, well, it's tech, right? And then you can say like security and risk, but it's not. It's about like the first step ever. It's
people.
Like, yes. Like
so you need the people.
To ensure that it's people so understand like, why would we move? Why should we even listen to that?
Yes.
And that is just people, right? And it's never about like yeah. tech and benefits, feature. It's nice, but if they don't get it, you'll be, I don't know. So in English, that is you'll be hitting that horse.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Because here, so exactly. But so here in the Netherlands, we say we pull that horse. So it's like
we do not harm animals in this show. So
no animals. Yes. Yeah, no, so we will have disclaimer. We'll have disclaimer at the end of the show. No animals have been harmed during recording of this show.
I think where the real disconnect comes in is the people who are the decision makers in the business not understanding the true pain points of the people who have to use their solution on a daily basis. And I think that's where the biggest disconnect come in, because in the internet, like anytime I'll hold a workshop for these companies, I make sure that there's at least one or two end users in the room from different departments. Because if you don't have the voice of the people who actually have to use it, then you're really not making something that's effective for the business. And I think a lot of companies really forget about like, you know, us lonely people. So it's really important to like get other people besides just, you know, one group in the room.
Any on that one, actually, any kind of other tips which you might, we're putting you on a spot without scripting or without any warnings, but any other kind of tips on from your consulting perspective, obviously getting the end user in the room, and that's a really important thing as well, which I keep on hearing as well, super, super important. What else would be the things to really consider?
Try different things. Just because you came up with a solution that you think works, see if it actually works. And if it doesn't, change it. A lot of companies, like they implement their intranet and it feels like it's written in stone and it's never to change. And it's like the biggest thing we have in our world is change. And if you're not keeping that feedback loop and iterating on it and creating new content and seeing what works and what doesn't, then you're going to fall back into the same, you know, forgive me, Bessa, that I hate SharePoint that we had, you know, 5-6 years ago, or even, you know, still longer. And it's not that SharePoint was ever bad. It's that, you know, people really didn't make it better over time for their users and the content and the ways that it worked for them. So I think instead of, you know, companies have to look internally to find new ways to engage users and don't always rely on just because it worked today kind of mentality. Other things that I can think of.
On that one, actually, before we go to the other things, just
perfect. So isn't that thinking, you know, that risk of, or the aversion against change, isn't that inherent to, well, we spend so much time on planning, designing these things, building all the money, all the months and weeks and hours that went into it, that now we finally have it, we're not changing again. Whereas if you would say the opposite, well, if we need to, let's say, be agile, if that's the right term, well, then you need to take a different approach, right? Like approach that accommodates change, basically, right?
That's the mentality and the transition which we're seeing within the last decade or so related on IT investments in general, right? Where we're trying nowadays, first of all, we don't do corporate intranets anymore, which cost millions and millions, which we used to, which were basically built in a way that you had the investments and then you had to stick with that intranet for 3 years or 5 years.
ROI.
And then you build a new one. And it's not a sustainable model. And then at the same time, it's not the sustainable model because you want to be in a cloud. And guess what? In the cloud, you get new stuff every single week for more value for the money, because that's the promise of Microsoft 365 as well. So on top of your existing investment, you'll just get improvements and better things. So the way we should be doing stuff is more kind of aligning to the evergreen, which was the one term which we used to use a while back. And making things happen. But I think now we are in this evergreen mode. and we are kind of this good enough to release mode as well, right?
So who is we? The customer, Microsoft, consultants,
sure.
Everybody? I don't think so.
Not everybody necessarily. I'm just trying to think those people who are actually within the cloud already and are using the modern experiences as an example, and then are adapting Microsoft Teams and adapting, embedding the portal maybe in Microsoft Teams and all of that stuff. So they're kind of adapting the new ways of working as well.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because with some of the customers I found, like, it's the exact opposite. Is it's the users wanting, yes, we want all the new functionality, and that sounds great. And it's actually IT that's going, oh no, like, we're, yeah, you know, the first question out of their mouth is, can we turn it off? Or can we stop it?
Well, it's just quite difficult. Why?
Why? Do you know why they do it?
Several different reasons, but I think it's a lack of knowledge on how to really understand how the platform works. Like the fact that it's okay to, you know, to create more site collections because you got Teams provisioning. You know, Microsoft has scaled to be able to accommodate that. You know, and so is your environment. Like there's not like a hard limit you're going to reach in the first month of turning it on. but I think it's always a fear, right? Like I think fear is what drives these decisions, is fear of like, I can't manage it, or someone's going to ask me a question that I'm not going to be able to answer, or if I leave self-service provisioning on, that someone's going to go create a site called I Hate Managers, you know, and I'm not going to know about it, and a manager's going to see it, and I'm like, well, the manager probably wouldn't see it because it's probably going to be a private, you know, thing that they won't even come back in their search unless someone tells them. But
it's going to be invisible in Delve. No.
it's always the fear that they are going to miss something, or that they're going to lose control over something they're responsible for, which sometimes drives really bad business decisions. And it's kind of a really hard conversation to have, because in a lot of companies, you don't have a team of people that are controlling SharePoint. SharePoint is just one of the many applications and platforms that they're responsible for. And so therefore, it's the less that I turn on, the less I have to worry about with this one specific app.
Right.
It's the wrong way to go, but it's a very difficult conversation to have sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And do you have an idea, like what would be needed to change that? Would it be tools? Would it be content, guidance, education?
One of the biggest asks that I've seen from customers, and it's getting better, and there's still obviously always room for improvement in any field, is analytics. Right? Like people can make decisions that are emotionally based about things that may be incorrect, but when you have actual data to back things up and can prove that data back out, it gives them both an opportunity to make educated decisions about their environments, as well as for the users, like understanding, you know, what content is actually clicked on within a page to determine if that page is providing value, not just whether someone went to that page because the homepage told them they had to. You know, being able to see like actual business data come back out of the platform, I think will help drive better results in the future coming out of it.
Yeah.
So,
and even again, if you think about from a Microsoft perspective, we've actually done a lot of focus on telemetry for internal usage, and now a lot of that stuff is going to be shown more and more on the UX for the customers as well. So really understanding the behavior, and then you as an IT or administrator or organization can understand, okay, what kind of data is there, which of my site collections are not used, and which are not, or which are, and all of that stuff. So super, super important part. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just had an idea. That would be really cool. Like, what if M365 could be connected to App Insights? All events across all M365 pushed in there, and you can query and monitor it and whatever you like, and you get templates for queries and charts if you want to do more, because like the data is yours anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So supporting across the Teams.
All SharePoint, events across everything, because now we have three reports.
Yeah.
And we can get some of the data in Power BI, but it's just that.
Yeah, it's service specific, unfortunately, right now. It's not a product specific. So
I think it also depends a little bit on like what endpoints you get out of the graph too, and you know what data you're allowed to get from there. I think that's actually you kind of hit on a key point, is that the data lives in so many different places, and knowing where to go and how to get it is kind of like running a corn maze. You may never make it back.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I mean, and that is just first thing, right? Okay, so you have a report, then what? It isn't actionable. Like, you get PDF or you get a chart, then what? Then you have to distribute it. You have to act on it. Like, there's increase in sites. What sites are there? Who created them?
The actual guidance on top of the actions, what you should be doing, making these things.
Exactly.
And those are highly dependent on the customer as well, which, by the way, is a super difficult piece of the guidance, because it's the gray guidance. It's like, well,
insights.
It depends.
Open the data, make it available, and
insights,
then you can connect it to logic apps.
Data. Yeah, but that's data. That doesn't bring you yet the actionable things what people should be doing.
But that is at least in that way, you have the ability to do it. Whereas now you're often locked and
limited. You have the visibility. Yeah, or not necessarily app insights. Coming back on Darcy, what you said related on Graph. Just have an API surface in Microsoft Graph, which actually gets you the access on the data, wherever the data is. It doesn't matter where the data is.
Yeah.
Why would you care? As long as you have access to the data.
And I think that's the important thing, because, I mean, as you go in like the security center and things like that, we start getting dashboards that help to inform what our decisions should be and help guide us in the right place. But we have that for things like security and things that keep us from getting in really big trouble. We don't have that to help guide the business to make better decisions yet. So I think like if we start, and I think there's a lot of opportunity, but obviously like, you know, with search being completely redone to be, you know, a full solution over the entire, you know, universe, that will be the first step in enabling us to get this kind of data and help and hopefully get there. Like, it's not an easy solution by any means, but it's my wish list.
If you think about the well-being, what's the insights? What's the inside data which we're getting always on
Mondays? Cortana analytics.
My
analytics, my workspace
analytics. Yeah, exactly. Because that proves that the data exists. It's just a matter of how do we package that and serve that.
Expose it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because then people
put it in Azure. Seriously. Put it in Azure.
People can partner ecosystem, could potentially build interesting solutions on top of it and all of that stuff. So absolutely. Yeah. One step at a time. I think we are heading to the right direction for sure.
Your internet gets a frowny face today.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier today that it's actually, if you think about even the wellness data which we're getting, which is actually really cool. But it's been a like 5 years journey to get to this moment where it's actually starting to be valuable, because it actually has interesting data around it. Well, for me, it always serves to zero quiet days and all of that stuff, but that's because my
boring
schedules are they are not typical. So it doesn't mean that anyway. So, but it's one of those things where it took quite a few years to get all of the telemetry endpoints to the right location, so you can connect the data, and then building the UX to actually expose the data for people. Mm-hmm. So, which is really cool.
Yeah, and of course, anytime you see data, people worry about security and are they seeing things they shouldn't see?
Absolutely,
and it's a double-edged sword. So. Education opportunity.
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, we did interrupt you there, Darcy, related on the recommendations. Any other things which you would recommend people to? We've been now jumping on here and there and multiple location. So making it super easy.
I think a really important thing that I've found is that understanding how people... human behavior comes when it comes to reading things on a screen, you know, and the data that you put in. If the quality of data that you put into your intranet is, you know, crap, that's kind of what you're going to get back out of it. And the reality is a lot of the things that I'm seeing is people who worked in comms that, you know, wrote up these, you know, flyers that would get posted on a billboard somewhere and everybody would be expected to read 13 paragraphs of information. Well, on a screen, we we don't read. What is this word? You know, we might scan for content really quick, see if it's interesting, and then we're moving on. So we're going to miss the intent of the content if it's not short, sweet, and to the point a little bit. And from a communication standpoint, I think trying to retrain people on that the internet and your intranet especially are different than writing the same documents that you had in the past, and whether it's more important to create a page with that information versus stick another document yet in a document library that no one knows what it is also, it's change. And but it's a really important one if you want to bring people back to the table and actually get your message out. And yeah, I think the new web parts are helping a lot with that, like news and things like that. But it also confuses them a little on the back end because it's a page and people don't understand basic terminology of what a page is versus what a site is versus even what a document library is. I have a client now that calls a document library a page. Like they really don't understand.
Well, and they go to a web page. It is a web page.
Yeah, kind of a page.
Yeah. Right. So when they're trying to explain their problems back to me, I have to sit there and go, wait, do you mean this? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, that's named this for the rest of the purpose of our conversation.
Let's not get hang up on details.
Now related on
my friend.
Related on all of this transition and related on that as well. How do you see the customers, let's say, now understanding the approach with SharePoint and Teams? Because Teams obviously is now the collaboration platform. Have you seen that kind of a transition with the customers? How they're seeing that?
Some of them have. I've had a couple customers ask for Teams to be their intranet. And I think Teams is amazing for collaboration and having those side conversations around content. But how do you find the content? And that's a little bit harder with Teams. Now, we can bring a SharePoint page into a Teams tab, which is great. But if they don't understand the fact that Teams has kind of a SharePoint back end to it, then they don't even know that that's a possibility. And then what happens is that you continually try to create, you put everything into one document library, and which becomes overloaded, and then you have to rely on search to try to find it. So you by Teams, you bring in the collaboration, but you lose the discoverability of things. And I think when Teams came out, and I think this is a problem that they're probably going to be trying to solve for a while, is that like the initial interface you could tell was really built around going against Slack and like the capabilities that were there. But, you know, like everything in the world, you know, Teams is starting to become a teenager and is going through some growing pains. And part of that is the scalability of the interface. Like not everything can be an icon on the left or a tab at the top. Otherwise you end up with like 24 tabs that you can't find, manage, understand, because there's nowhere else to go. So I think it's going to be a really interesting challenge for the Teams team to be able to kind of become more scalable in that way while still trying to combine and add all the features that everybody really loves and wants. So it's going to be a fine line, and I'm really interested to see how they kind of tackle the challenge a little bit.
Cute input, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah. and this interesting amount of discussions in general related on the direction and how it should be integrated and how things should be done, especially now that Jeff Tepper owns the OneDrive, SharePoint, and Teams.
I'm so excited.
We're heading more and more on the collaboration level thinking and trying to align everything inside of this super massive organization. So which, by the way, makes a lot of sense. So building win-wins rather than competing. So
exactly.
That's always a smart thing to do.
It's a win.
It's a win. It is a win. Should we do the articles at this moment?
Yes, let's do that.
Absolutely brilliant joke. And then we'll come back on the discussions. So let me actually share my screen.
My moments.
Yes. It's... So let's start from the Microsoft Teams site. And there was three new blog posts from last week. reimagine image meeting room experiences with Teams-enabled devices and shared space. This was actually quite interesting. So we're talking about devices for Microsoft Teams, which are optimized for it. And I think this one had, you need to go in here, where we had a small Teams devices, which have their own screens and just for the Microsoft Teams, not necessarily just the video. So there was actually on screens and all of this stuff. And obviously this is designed for actual meeting rooms rather than anybody investing on this and home.
But I mean, like, really you cool can stuff. Meet in your own room and then you will have a meeting room.
Thank you, Valerie.
You can always, if you need to have, if you want this, you can always come up with an excuse. However,
true.
A device of
true.
Almost $5,000.
So. Exactly.
Oh, Valdik.
It's for small rooms. There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm the audience.
Yes, you can buy one of these. Absolutely. Yeah. We will let you buy one of these. Okay. How to get most out of Together Mode? This was announced. We've been previewing this internally.
To be honest,
I think it's weird. And it looks much better like that when everybody is at the same distance from the screen. But quite often, I'm actually like this and talking. And then I would be the small person versus you're closer to the screen or the video, and you will be set. So the size differences would be.
It's like real life. Like you have tall people and short people.
Sure.
Small people,
sure.
People.
Sure. But it's actually, I think it's a great idea. And obviously, they can improve it over time. And we will be improving it over time, adding additional different views and scenes. And then probably the sizing will be adjusted and all of that stuff. So it will be actually really cool. So
I think like this is very good, especially like if you can share your screen and then at the side see this, like the view of your audience. And you can talk to your audience as opposed to at your camera.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I think the challenge is always the fact that when do you talk to camera and or when do you talk to the screen? Because as an my example, I have you in here, but I can't, if I watch this, I'm not watching the camera. And then...
That is probably you're like you using the tools in the wrong way, where the screen should be below the camera. So that's like, it's almost indistinguishable. Yeah.
Yeah,
I want to know when they talk about people's bandwidth to actually run video. I'm starting to get really curious about that one lately.
Yeah, that's true as well. Obviously, the combination of the there's only one stream which is coming in or coming out. So the work isn't done on your side, and then it's done in server side in Azure to combine the streams. But still, you need to have bandwidth for the video screening, absolutely. And maybe we are in a lucky position, three of us right now in this call, that we can actually do this. So without computer going, I can't. So at least my own laptop was having a really hard time of these things. So when you
I'm
do
keeping my fingers everything. Crossed.
Yeah, yes. Good. Then this one, introducing Microsoft Teams display. This one actually was the one which I was referring with the first one. This one was interesting. Let's say, progress. So there will be new type of screens and computers or devices which actually are designed for the Teams. And of course, the intention of this is not that you would actually buy them to yourself at home or work and carry them. It's basically for the receptionists and places where it actually makes sense to then have a dedicated screen where people can book your meetings or help other people to book the meetings and all of that. So, but it's actually kind of interesting that we're heading to this direction as well, and pretty cool looking devices as well. Obviously, they will be then cheaper than the Windows 10 computers because they're dedicated for that purpose. So.
Well, and I think it would be also cool to have an app that does exactly the same thing on Android and iOS. So that's so
true.
That if you have a device already at home, convert that into the same assistant experience.
Yep. Same experience, same UX, basically. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. Good idea, by the way. Let me add notes to...
But I mean, like, this could be exactly a full page app.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
A web app, basically, right?
Yep.
Like there is nothing on the screen that you couldn't build already today with an API, I think. Maybe except for the voice thing.
I don't know. Voice. There is a voice API even on the Teams SDK. So
fair enough. Well, there you go.
So Cool. Anyway, good idea. Great idea. Now, this one is more on the SharePoint side of the house. So evolve internet intelligent intranet to transform employees' communication digital experiences. That's a mouthful. But basically, there is now a training package, AKMS Intelligent Intranet. And this is a really cool setup of trainings. So Debiani and Brad, Mike and Matt and multiple other people internally have been working on this one. And basically, getting started on building those experiences. And then there are individual videos for different capabilities and different areas. We'll link to the SharePoint lookbook for inspiration, which is a great way of getting inspiration, but then actually having a video series and trainings on things. And Debiani is the cool. Here as the primary speaker. She's really awesome on this thing. Absolutely. Now, then this one also came live last Thursday, on-demand training sessions for SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams, Yammer, and Stream 2020 H2. Interesting code on the end. But basically, the whole point being on the fact that we have an updated set of virtual training videos from Jeff Deeper, from multiple other people like Randy or Ankiti or Lincoln DeMaris, related on different capabilities in the Microsoft 365 level in the collaboration area. And then we'll walk through the different features and functionalities on those. And all of these videos are obviously free for you to access any way you want. And they are in YouTube channel. You can access them through this blog post or from the YouTube channel as well. So really cool stuff as well. A lot of videos to watch. Videos seems to be growing to be the way of learning things in many areas. I don't know. Some people love that. Some people don't like that. It's debatable. I know, Waldeck, your opinion on that one. So
No, I mean, they are good for some things, but if you want to have overview, it's hard to skim through a video.
True. It is. Yeah, absolutely correct on that. Good. A lap around Microsoft Craft Toolkit, day 14. We have quite a few of these actually as well. This is from Cameron Quire, using Microsoft Craft Toolkit with Angular. So getting started on that one, guidance on how to get started. Really cool stuff on that one if you're looking into building stuff in Angular. A lap around Craft Toolkit. Resources, roadmap, and next steps is from Beth. Beth being the PM, who's actually, she's been helping on setting up the whole setup and being the editor. Basically, it's now done for again for a while. Maybe there will be a new training sessions for those. And this is just a collection of all of the different assets related on Craft Toolkit. So really cool stuff as well. Now, this one, updated content recommendations for your Microsoft 365 Developer Program dashboard. I think, Waldeck, you were testing this out.
Yeah.
Different. So basically, based on, first of all, everybody will get a free Microsoft 365 tenant when they sign up for the Microsoft 365 Developer Program, super important thing. And then when you sign up, you can say that I'm interested in these things. And then that surface is recommended information related on your interest, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, it is an interesting way to explore pages that, or docs or samples that you wouldn't find otherwise, right? So it's just this single place that, based on your interest, as you said, it shows you the things that might help you take the next steps. Like if you are experienced with Node and you want to build something for Outlook, well, here from this single place you can see what are the article samples available around Node in Outlook.
And this one was Get Notified Present Changes. The Microsoft Craft Present Subscription API is now available for public preview. And really, really, really great stuff. Anyan Mishra. So basically, looking, you are able to hook in the presence information in the Teams, or I think it's if you're still using Skype for whatever reason, you would be using Skype. But anyway, your own presence information. So really cool stuff as well. So now you can actually then you can basically, can you actually hook in other people's presence?
I think that is the whole point. If I wait on you to become available, then I subscribe to your presence. And then whenever you become available,
I get to pick on my way of working. Then
I do it already anyway. So now I have an API for that.
Yes. Every single time I open up either any of my devices.
Hey, Sasha.
Now, Hugo is working on our samples for the SPFX web parts, and one of the really cool samples here is our timeline sample.
Oh, I want this one. This is awesome.
It's really nice, isn't it?
So you can actually then build timelines, vertical, horizontal. You can hook in the pictures, do different things. So really, really cool stuff, easily doable. So, and this one was from Anandeep, but really cool way of actually exposing data and different options and settings on 1.11. And Ravi has been involved in this as well. So Anandeep and Ravi are related on that one. Now, basic security setup for Microsoft 365, M365 com docs. So
Liam Cleary.
Liam contributed on the Microsoft 365 community docs, which is a great way for anybody to actually contribute on the docs. So we're building this community docs location for non-dev topics. And really, people can contribute, MVPs or non-MVPs contribute on this. And really great stuff setup related on basic security setup for Microsoft 365. This one is from .client, finding SharePoint 2010 workflows in SharePoint Online. Why would you do that? Why do you care?
Well, there's this thing, this one team at Microsoft announced last week that these workflows are going away in November 1st. There you go. There, it's even on the screen. Yes. November 1st, SharePoint 2010 workflows will go away. So T-minus 3-4 months, everybody needs to do something about them or things will not no longer work.
Yeah.
Someone basically pressed the panic button.
I'm not going to comment anything on, obviously, I know what's happening internally, but the easiest way to actually get on top of this and understanding are people using the SharePoint 2010 workflows is to use the modernization scanner, SharePoint modernization scanner, which is an open source tool, which basically you can sign into your tenant, you can execute that against your tenant, and then it gives you the results related on, hey, here we have a workflow where it's been used and all of the details, how it has been used, is it running, what's the status out of it. So really, really cool stuff. So you can actually drill into the data in your tenant. So it's great way to know beforehand, before somebody starts yelling, where did my workflow go, right? This one is Microsoft Search and Q&A from Vera Sakar. Microsoft Search and Q&A questions related on this one. So how can you actually answer those questions and surface then as an example? What were these called in the old fast or in the old
tags,
search?
What are tags? Refiners?
No. This is when you actually hit a search keyword.
Recommendation. You mean the hit highlight queries?
Hit highlights, exactly. Yes, that's what those are, basically. Thank you. And then from ICA, Microsoft Graph Power Automate, Microsoft 365 data with no code. So basically getting access on the Microsoft Graph data, using then the Power Automate and automating that access. And how do you actually do that? It does get a bit complicated with all of the JSON files. Is that actually coding or not? What's your take on the, is JSON coding?
Technically, no.
Yes.
But you really, like coding, you really need to have an understanding of what you're putting in there and what it does in order to be effective.
That is true. That is so true. Now, and then the last article before we go back on the discussions. So there's a new version of SharePoint Client-Side Browser from Pram Dayakar. So this is absolutely, absolutely brilliant tool. If you're working with SharePoint in SharePoint Online or in on-premises as well, because it supports 2010, 2013, 2016, 2019. That's a pretty impressive list, actually, by the way. But basically getting access on all of the properties and information around the tenant and the site collections and the settings and properties. So you get access on everything with this. So really cool stuff. But that's it for the article. So let me actually stop in here and let's get back on the video discussion. Now, how do we want to close the show? Did we script this?
On a
positive note.
A high note, yes.
High note.
Always a high note.
Yes. Now, maybe one high note just before we actually actually close the show with Darcy. For those who are interested, we will actually be having a 4 weeks break on the BMP Weeklies after this.
This is the last show before the break.
Yes. So the last of the season will go season 3 after this, right? Or season 4. I can't remember.
Yeah, very good. I have no idea. I think
yes.
Three. I think
it's three. Season three. Yes.
Maybe we could ask Andrew to either come up with like the best moments of, or we recommend like 4 episodes to rewatch on the break.
Yes.
We have to have our audience something, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, no, I hate my work.
Well, Baldic, what you could do, because Microsoft's been doing so much innovation, is find someone asking for something and then find the video where it's answered and they're talking about it. Not that you guys have so much time during break.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes.
That's good feedback. Yeah,
that is a great feedback. Let me put that to our backlog. So
we take this idea, we pin it on the wall.
Yes.
So dark's at it.
I wrote it in a post-it note. It is now on the wall, so it's all good. I don't even know how old those post-it notes are.
Do they stick?
I don't think they do that anymore. it's my, and whenever I moved into electronic task management with Todo, I had some leftover notes which I needed to get back to. So they're like 6 months old. So
those are the ones that you write notes on for your kids' lunch.
Yes.
In Todo.
Good. Okay, let's get actually back on the on our visitors this week as well. So for the upcoming, let's say, weeks or upcoming, let's say, from a work related, what are you planning to do, or what are you working on within this week or in the upcoming weeks?
Right now, I've got a few different clients and working on their intranets, and I've got a really neat search-based one that's going to be happening in Boston with an engineering firm. So my goal is just stay as busy as possible, because, you know, people need a lot of help right now, and being available to help is going to be a good thing. So,
yep, absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. What I'm going to do right now, I'm going to actually, after 4 days or 5 days, if we include this one, this is debatable. We are halfway through, kind of, or whatever. So I'm going to go on family vacation. Finally, it's been a long time. So
will you be able, honestly, close the laptop for 3 weeks?
Unfortunately, no. It's actually slightly even sad, but there are multiple things which might act. We cannot stop certain things, and then there might be surprises, and then I need to potentially help here and there. So it's slightly sad, but hey, it is what it is.
Maybe great, we should power, with great power comes great responsibility.
That's true as well. Yeah. So, but it's fine. It's partly, like we talked about in this show as well, for me this work is kind of like hobby, but I'm getting paid, which is pretty okay. Don't tell my manager that. So I don't actually mind that much.
You're getting paid? I thought like we were all paying to be able to do this, or no? Doesn't work that way.
Let's talk about that one after the recording more fully. So.
Yeah, press the pause button. Yes.
I don't know how it works in Rancor. I need to talk with Matthias on this one. So, no. But all good. But before I go to a vacation, we're looking into hopefully releasing SharePoint Framework 1.11 this week. So that will hopefully happen. In the best case scenario, it might, well, no. It depends when you're watching this video. It might have already happened. The video comes out on Tuesday, so we'll see if we get it released. 1.11 has a lot of focus on Microsoft Teams and improvements on the Microsoft Teams side. And then we enable the SharePoint Framework Store when 1.11 is available, which is actually really cool.
Finally, so, when have you announced it for the first? 2 years ago?
It's been a really long ride. We talked about it in MVP Summit like 3 years ago already, first time or something like that. And then it got delayed. And then we basically, I think the last time was it like, let's not even talk about it until it's released. So we need to get it out.
We reached
that
point.
But now it's actually happening. We worked on a pipeline validation and all of that stuff, which is a surprisingly painful thing. But then now we're just waiting for 1.11 to come out. And we're, as part of that 1.11 blog post, we'll also announce the store, which is really cool.
Perfect.
And obviously, supporting SharePoint framework built for Microsoft Teams is included in the store as well. So you can actually do that, which is yay, really cool. Waldeck, what's happening for you this week?
CLI.
CLI.
We're doing some updates to let everybody, when SPFX 111 becomes available, to let everybody update their project as easily as we can, because everybody wants people to be on 111 because it enables them to publish the web parts and extension that they built in the store.
Yep.
Right. And it just,
and by the way, on that one, congratulations for Rabia Williams getting involved in the Office 365 CLI as the maintainer. So really, really cool as well. So
absolutely.
We're obviously all the time that there's so many projects ongoing, and I think every single team is looking into growing. CLI has a really great, Office 365 CLI has a really great way of getting people involved. And while you've been doing a great job on that, we're trying to replicate that for a lot of the other projects as well. So getting people more easily, let's say, included in the projects as well. So,
yeah.
But Rabia is now.
Yeah, we're lucky. We're lucky with our team and all the help that we get. So, it's only a tribute to everybody who helps us. And it's great to see that now, even after 3 years, we keep getting new people and fixes, which are even sometimes like, you should add this thing in quotes. Like, perfect. That is an improvement. It will unblock somebody else who might otherwise just copy the whole string, paste it. It doesn't work.
Yep.
Whereas now it's fixed, right? So it's small things that help as well. So never, never, never underestimate the effect of the smallest fix you can do on even on docs.
True.
Right? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But so we're doing that today. So by the time you listen to it, it happened yesterday. We did a webinar or even a mini summit at Rancor around Teams governance. So it will be four people, myself included, Lori Potmeyer, Joanne Klein, Sue Henley, and myself talking about different areas of Teams. We have, I think, 1,500. We are very close to 1,500 folks on it. So it will be a really cool event. So we've done that yesterday. anything else? Not off the top of my head. It's just busy doing work, building things. Yeah. Yep. Staying busy. And then in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to be away for 3 weeks. So, and I will really try for the first time ever, like, not to open the laptop for any work or code related things.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully,
I will try. I said I will try.
Yes. and to be honest, at least in my case, it's almost like after 1 week being on vacation, you start to have the itch of, hey,
shake,
like
you mean shake?
Yeah, exactly. I need to start doing something. That's a sign that the vacation time is actually working. So that's really good as well. Anyway, I think that sums up for this week. So thank you, Darcy, and I just can't pronounce your name properly. DRC. Is that better?
DRC.
DRC. Thank you, DRC.
No.
It happens. It's been years. I kind of just answer to hey you now as long as you ask nicely.
But thank you for joining us, and a really, really good discussion related on the importance of the information architecture and designing and the human side of the IT, which is absolutely the most important side. So it's not about the technology. It's really about the humans and trying to find out what we serve and what we build for them. And thank you, Waldeck, once again. And thank you for the listeners or watchers. And we'll be back with a new PMP weekly, not within a week, within 4 weeks.
4 weeks. 4 weeks.
Yes. We'll be back with season 4, a few season 3. So
for a second, I thought you said we will be back with season 3. I was like, what?
No, use Microsoft Craft, always. Use Microsoft Craft.
It's time for vacation for the both of you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm hearing things. I'm hearing things.
We already do that.
Well,
but cool. Thanks, everybody. And thanks for the feedback. And we'll be definitely in touch. So, bye-bye. Cheers.
Bye. Thank you.